This is Jennifer Yushkevich interviewing scholar Hui Wu at RSA 50. We are ready to go.
Okay.
So the first question is, when did you first join RSA and how did you hear about it?
I joined RSA in 1996, and my professor, Winifred Horner, introduced me to RSA. And then that was probably the first conference I seriously delivered the paper as a graduate student. But then the first conference was at 1996 in Tucson, Arizona. Teresa Enos was the organizer. It was fun. And then through Wing Horner, I met Jim Knievy. We actually had lunch together. And Wing Horner and I decided to swim in the evening. So we're in our swimsuit with a towel over us. And then we walk into the elevator. We saw Richard Young. Now you know how early this history could be. I was so embarrassed, but then, you know, Wing Horner was Wing Horner. Yeah. So that's how I joined.
I have heard stories about Wing Horner, especially in the way she guided young female academics.
Right.
Could you tell me more about her mentorship style and what it meant to work with her for you?
Yeah, well, she was the one who actually enlightened me. I came to the United States to study American literature. So I was holding a fellowship to study literature. And then I was taking her History of English Studies class. And I took a rhetoric class before that class, but I did not understand rhetoric. So, and then when I was in her class, she encouraged us to just do whatever you want to. Research, read, and then give me feedback. You guys just write these response papers. So I started to check the literacy in China, and that led me to my current research. You know, I'm still doing it because of the beginning in her class. So I told her after 2 weeks, I told her, what is this class we're taking? You are studying rhetoric. I said, yeah, what is it about? And then she looked at me, she said, rhetoric is not about everything. Rhetoric is about using language to persuade people, how language is built, literacy, all these things. So I said, well, actually, I'm thinking about doing this, rhetoric and composition instead of literature. She looked at me, she said, are you serious? I said, and then she said, think about it, and in a week you'll talk to me. So I said, just tell me what rhetoric composition is. So she explained the brief history and then said, tell you what, in rhetoric composition is much easier to get a job. She's fantastic, you know. So I went back, and then I was thinking, I was talking to my husband, and the second day I found her, I said, I made up my mind. I want to change. Okay. I said, do I need to talk to the director of graduate studies? She said, I'll cover that for you. And then she did. And I went up to choose courses for next semester and change my concentration. So I, as a Chinese, you always like withdraw and apologize. So I apologized to Dr. Linda Hughes. I said, Dr. Hughes, I'm so sorry to cause you so trouble, you know, but I really want to pursue this. And she, you know what she said? Everybody should have free will to quest. And I quoted her in my acknowledgement in my book. This is how it happened. And then later on, because Wing Horner was holding the Redford chair, endowed chair position of rhetoric and composition, and then she's in the retirement phase. And then Jan Swearingen was visiting. And Susan Jarrett was visiting a year before Jen's Wernji. So before Jen arrived on campus, she put a book in my mailbox, Richard Oliver's Communication in China, in Ancient China and India. That's how it started. So without them, I wouldn't have today.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a particular community, especially of female academics, who've been brought together by Wynne Horner. Krista Ratcliffe, right?
Yes.
One of my advisors, Christine Ferris.
Yes.
Yeah. Who else is in that school, the Wynne Horner School?
The Wynne Horner School, okay. Kathleen Welch, we are still friends. She's also friends with Corbett in Ohio State. And then she was also for James Boleyn and Janice Lauer. So through her network, I knew all of them. And I remember in our class, I remember James Boleyn passed away. And then Wynne Horner mentioned that to us. So and I remember that moment, it was very sad, you know. So through her, through this net, I am friends with Cheryl Glenn, Issa Lead, Andrea Lunsford. We're just a whole group, you know. And then she also, Wynne Horner was one of the founders of Four Seas. And then later on, she was one of the founders of Coalition of Women Scholars in History and Rhetoric, in the history of rhetoric and composition. Yeah. So I'm still there. I'm on the advisory board. It's a great, vibrant, dynamic, very diverse organization. So she did a lot. And then before I also learned how to control my time. Because Wynne Horner had four kids. When she started to pursue her PhD, she was 40-some, and then she was adjunct in the University of Missouri, and then she became instructor, and then she told her chair, I wanted to be like these people, male, you know, professors. Oh, and then he told her, you need a PhD. And she said, what is a PhD? So, and then she went to Michigan to get her PhD. And I remember she told the story that when she was her kids were sick, and then she could not write papers. So she was really militant to them so she could be with them, but at the same time working at the same time, you know. So it was a great story. And then she graduated when she was 50. In 5 years, she was famous. She told me, you need to know where people are. You need to know what they do. So, you know, I noticed that. And then we asked, I said, well, Dr. Horner, do you have any articles I can read so that I can be you? That was me. She said, Hui, she looked at me. Hui, I write articles. I write books. So when she passed away, actually, before she retired, she published 35 books. It was amazing. So she gave me a lot of tips on how to be an academic. And then the most important thing, I asked the question, I said, how can I keep how to be able to be independent as a scholar? And she said, most important thing, research, 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 research. Only research makes you mobile, you know. So that's her advice. I still keep the day. And then another thing I've learned, and then that's why people can see me like working, but without stressed out. And then you can see me have fun and then handle a lot of stuff. That's what I learned from Wynne Horner. She was directing the writing program at University of Missouri. And then it was just mad work, everybody. And then she had, I don't know how many adjuncts or people she was directing. And then she told me before 10 o'clock, she unplugged her phone so that nobody would bother her. And then she used a locker in the library to work on her research. And until probably 10:30-ish, then she went back to office and then plugged the phone in. So, yeah. And then now, and she's an early riser as well. I tried, but then I could not get up so early. Like she, I mean, when she was older, she would get up at like 4:30 to write. And by the time, you know, other people get up, she's already done her work. And she said, I feel happy. I can do whatever. And then nobody bothers me. I'm happy to see them. So it's now happening to me because I always, and she asked me, what is most important? As a scholar, as a professor, it's research. But then nobody, I always remember, nobody would ask you about your research. Everybody asks something else. Nobody. By the time you are tenure, they ask that thing only. You see my point? And then I always remember. And now I remember she said, put the most important thing first on that day. And when you finish that, you feel great. And now I'm doing that. Like early in the morning, I'm in the office. People think, well, she's great. She's always in the office. Yeah, before 11 o'clock, that's my time doing my research. After 11 o'clock, somebody comes to see me and they say, oh, I'm so bothered. No, you're not. I'm happy to see you. It's great. That's yeah, so that's her mentorship. I mean, she taught me so much about how to manage your time, how to put the priority as your focus. And then without her, I don't have a fantastic life even. Yeah, she asked me, she said, do you want, I remember this conversation. She said, Hui, do you want to work here to find a job in the United States or you want to go back? I said, well, I'm debating. I may want to go back because I was already in a chair of a department. I'm kind of like established, and then now I'm at ground zero, you know. So it would be easier at that point, I was thinking. And she said, but Hui, you know, life here, you can have luxury. And my answer was, but then I said, luxury is a habit. Oh yeah, that's right. But then afterwards, I feel, I talked to my daughter. My daughter at that point was only 12. And I said, Mom wants to go back. Do you think that you want to come back with me to China? What's your plan? I mean, she was little. She said, Mom, you want to go back because it's easier. You know, your chair, you go back, you got your position, you know. I could be a dean, a YP, whatever. And then she said, but you won't test yourself. You do not know ever whether you'll make it here or not. And that's a very good statement, a very good challenge. And I said, yes, I would like to test myself. I could not believe how much potential I, because of that decision that I brought out about myself.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's all because of Wing Warner and Jen Swearingen.
So to think about RSA, how would you describe the organization when you first came to it? Because it sounds like you knew a lot of people before you ever came here.
No. So I met all of them just that time, 1996, Tucson, Arizona. I saw Cheryl Glenn because Wing Warner purposefully took me to meet these people. This is Cheryl. I was just new, like third year graduate student, you know, but then she introduced me to everybody. That's how I met.
So do you think that is a typical introduction to RSA? How do you think people become part of the RSA community then?
I believe that's the people. Like today, because I was traveling to China, I was on a summer faculty by guest faculty of a university in China until this year. So the contract ended. So, and I mean, it's people. Today, I was trying to see, like I was looking at Steve Mayu, who was interviewing when I opened that. And then that's, he's my friend, you know? He's my friend. So, and I was trying to see who I can see. I just saw Elif, my friend from Joanna Trump from TCU, you know. So it's people that you see. It's people you where you can find, you talk to and inform your projects.
So do you think that what makes RSA special is the community that's here?
I believe so. It's a community. And another thing is that you want to see what is happening in our field in terms of scholarship. Like who is doing what? Like if you have your project in mind, you'll see, wow, that's the session I want to go to because I may want to talk to that person. I may want to quote that person. I may want to watch that person's publication someday so that I can keep on going with my own project.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So what were some of the major projects that RSA was working on when you first joined?
At that point, it was still majorly pretty traditional, classical rhetoric. And then I was probably, I belong probably still early people in doing Chinese rhetoric. But then that conference, I published my first paper, The Anthemem and the Chinese Thinking Pattern, something like that. Yeah. Another thing is that RSA used to publish, you know, I think it still does, the proceedings. So, and the younger scholars, when they have a good project to come to the conference, they can submit their manuscripts. So even if it's not accepted, well, you are encouraged to do so. You know, you get a first review, which is not so harsh, and then RSA people are always very gentle, even if they are critical, they're very encouraging at the same time.
So, you described this really great moment where Wynn Horner took you around RSA and was like, there's Cheryl Glenn, here's this person, here's that person. Do you have any other memories of being at RSA that you think are just characteristic of what RSA is? Like, oh, that was such an RSA thing to happen.
Let me think. It's much smaller. And then RSA, usually RSA has a banquet thing where you have that plenary speaker, and usually that speech is hilarious. You know, like I remember when Horner delivered her speech, I mean, still using that speech as a springboard toward history of composition in the United States. You know, it's that essay was another step forward based on Park's article on well, English Department of Law, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm still using that. It's fun. And then I ask my students to do a family tree. They have to digest the information, do a family tree, and then they can cheat, they can work together. I just want them to get an idea. This is how it goes. Yeah. Yeah.
Wynn Horner's been gone for a while.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
How do you think, like, do you have memories after she wasn't coming anymore of RSA? Like, what, any moment that you remember post Wynn Horner?
She was going to CS, I think 3 years before she died. Yeah. I'm actually the second closest person to Wynn Horner. The most, the closest person is Nalega Ye, because they did the same project, History of Scotland. Yeah, Scotland. Scottish rhetoric, the influence of Scottish rhetoric on the United States, on Harvard curriculum. Yeah.
She's down in Georgia?
Georgia State.
Georgia, yeah.
Yeah.
So Since Win Horner's not here anymore, do you think RSA has changed for you?
Well, like I said, I haven't come to this conference for, I don't know how many years, it's every other year. So for a pretty long time, I cannot really nail down the, pin down the characteristics. It would be very rushy for me to make a judgment, you know.
That's fair.
But then I remember the 1998 Pittsburgh. Yeah, Jan Swearengin, who was also, they co-directed my dissertation. Yeah, so Jan Swearengin was the president who was organized that conference. So, and then, but then we did not have enough chairs. So I was chairing five or six. I could not remember how many sessions, whenever there was, wait, can you do this? Okay. That was a great one, yeah. And then that there was also a proceeding that she edited. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Now, you said you just got here today,
mm-hmm.
right? So as you've walked around RSA, has anything struck you as different or surprising?
Well, because I have been going into four Cs without missing much. So the most important thing, like that struck me today was, wow, everything is in one place, it's so easy. And then I look at the publishers, so focused, no composition, great. And I saw my book there, you know, and the people, you know, and said, wow, it's so easy. I actually checked this room and then I wanted to find my room for tomorrow. And then so it's, everything is in place and everybody's on the same floor. So I can see so many people in one place. It's not as overwhelming as four Cs. Yeah.
Especially this year, four Cs was.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so if you could make some predictions, even though you haven't been here for a few years, what do you think RSA will look like next year or 10
years? I believe RSA would involve more studies of race. Feminists, it was very rare when I was attending. Okay. It was just taking off probably late 90s and then 2000. Because the article I published in that special issue was kind of like a little after what the Rhetorica, what was that, Reclaiming Rhetorica? That book came out, so it was pretty early. But I believe that the gender studies will be strengthened. At the same time, the comparative rhetoric will involve more people. More people are interested in comparative rhetoric, and now we call it a global rhetoric. So that I saw Elif, who's doing Turkish rhetoric.
Who is this?
Elif Gauder? Yeah. And then Keith Lloyd is doing Indian rhetoric. He's published several articles. I mean, many very good scholar. I saw Lu Ming, and I'm here. And then I saw Bo Wang, who's also, where the two like doing Chinese feminist rhetoric people. Yeah, so I believe this will be. And then classical rhetoric will still be there. But then classical rhetoric to me is, the majority is kind of like shifted, taken over by the International Society for the History of Rhetoric. You know, you see a lot of European people who are doing, but they, I mean, their research is fascinating though. I just love listening to them. Yeah, so, and then the younger generation, younger generation is not one now, I'm getting old. So they are more interested in the, history of the institution of rhetoric and composition, which is part, like, for example, the interview itself, is that I think that's a great thing. I also found out in our field, I just look at the book title, which said the best journals in 2015, 2016. That can be a project. But then rhetoric composition people can make this thing, this type of project based on data, but make these projects more intellectual, more historical based, and then put it in the solid ground on scholarship instead of like data. You know, some research, you know, they have the beginning, they have the methodology talk, and they have the data, and they have the data discussion. We don't do that. We have a very diverse perspective on our methodologies and the projects we're doing. We always have that substantive discussion, which involves history, you know, theory, sources, you know, we're still solidly in the humanities, but our sense about data and the scientific use of data is getting sharper and sharper. And then we bring that in to our tradition of the humanities without trumping the tradition, but we are doing the same, the new thing. So that's how, and that's why this field is getting bigger and bigger, and then there are more needs for the people who graduated from this, with this degree. You know, that's what I can foresee.
This is a related question. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a vision of the future, but what do you hope to see at RSA in the future?
I hope that we will have more people to do to connect rhetoric with composition. I have seen composition recently is shifting to more like education research. Hard to say whether it is hard, is social science or not. It's kind of like that. I would like to see there is more connection between rhetoric and composition. And then now, sometimes when they do rhetoric, they just throw that word out there in research without unfolding that word of rhetoric and to show why you define this phenomena, this thing you are doing as rhetorical. It's kind of like a word you take for granted. If we continue to do that, I do not think that the rhetoric would make sense to a lot of people outside our field, because it would be like, oh, that's his rhetoric, that type of thing. So that's my little word. And I was talking to Jeff Walker several years ago. I said, how do you feel about the field? He said, oh, well, I feel it's more. We're actually attending RSA. So we saw each other, and then we became friends. And then he said, it's kind of like more social science, like your education, learning based. You know, he's a solid classical rhetoric scholar, you know, great one. You know, and I said, yeah, I feel the same thing. You know, so it's kind of like we're leaving the roots of our field. You know, people started to study rhetoric in order to figure out how to teach composition. And now composition is getting bigger, bigger. And then literally, it's kind of like you're forgetting what started the whole field, you know. But I was very lucky to have this first or 1.5 according to Janice Lauer. Janice Lauer told me that Winhorner was not she's not the first generation. So I said, 1.5? She said, that's about right. So I'm generation 2 or 3, I don't know, 2.5, 3.5, I don't know. Because I could not say Jess Werenjin is first generation. She's not, you know, she's not second generation either, because she's later than Wayne Warner. So I'm Jen's student, and was Jen and Cheryl Glenn's kind of like a same generation, and Elizabeth Flynn, you know, they are kind of like the same generation. So are they 2.5 or 3, or am I 3 or 3.5? I don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you want to say about RSA to wrap it up?
I think that's great. I just want to say congratulations. This is a fantastic project, and I'm so glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're here, too. Thanks so much
Thank
for
you,
coming
Jennifer.
In. Thank you.